Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Basu and Gadai Notebook. On this Friday, February 23rd. Hello, my friend. How are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, doing well. It's Friday. Canadians not doing
not
so well.
Not too disappointed. Not too disappointed to that you were not in Pittsburgh. It's a fun city to be in.
It is a fun city to be in. I'm not disappointed to not be on this trip. It's not a great trip, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, our listeners and viewers know, like, basically the way we evaluate a trip is not the cities that you're in, it's how much access to the team that you get as a reporter. And so on this trip, you had a morning skate in Pittsburgh, post game, they were getting out of town after the game, then they have a day off in New Jersey on Friday, then they have an afternoon game on Saturday in New Jersey, and so no morning skate there, so only a post game avail. So yeah, not much access to the team on this trip, so I'm happy to be sitting this one out.
They didn't even have a morning skate in Pittsburgh. There was only
Avail. That's right. They switched that too. Yeah. It was even worse from an Avail standpoint. Yeah. So it's glad that we can pick and choose the trips that are appropriate. But anyhow, I mean, regardless of that, we did want to talk a little bit about the state of the team. Obviously, the trade deadline is right around the corner. 2 weeks today, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? Is my math right?
Yes, it is.
2 weeks today. Yeah. So
the countdown is on.
Yeah, the Canadiens are plummeting down the standings, which I'm sure to a lot of fans is good news. And I'm not saying you're wrong, but, you know, this is the worst stretch the Canadiens have had. I mean, they've had another four-game losing streak earlier in the season. This matches that. This is the worst stretch they've had this season. Yeah. It's the first time all year they are 5 games below 500. In fact, it's the first time all year that they're more than 3 games below 500, if I'm not mistaken. So they've had this all year. They've managed to sort of be within striking distance of 500. No more than 2 games above 500, no less than 3, no more than 3 games below 500. And now they have slipped below that threshold kind of at the perfect time. So they have a difficult schedule in March, and it's the possibility, you know, we had on a previous episode, we were talking about, you know, how low can they get? We said that the floor was they weren't going to get into the top five is what we kind of gathered from the way things looked then. Now, not so sure.
I remember last year at some point we were making fun of the fact that they had big games coming up, 4-point games against, you know, bottom dwellers. And they've got one of those games coming up next Tuesday when the Coyotes will be in town. Mm-hmm. Without party guy Adam Ruzicka for all intents and purposes, but that will be one of those games where, you know, for those though who are the proponents of tanking, mm-hmm. they'll look at that game with great interest, because if there's one team right now, when you look at the schedule, one team that's plummeting just as much or even worse than the Canadiens, it's the Coyotes, and they're the team most likely to prevent them from getting a top five ranking at the lottery, top five picks. So that's big game. And before that, I mean, they're going to play against a team that's really fighting for its life. and you get into, you know, second half of the season, at this point in the year, you get teams that it's a lot. Who's got the most urgency in their game? And the Devils are really fighting for it, and they're on the outside looking in. But I mean, this is definitely a game that they're going to try to win. So we could easily be talking about, you know, next episode about a 5-game losing streak with the Coyotes coming in.
Yeah, and if you look back, I mean, just in terms of the Canadiens' potential to move down the standings, if you will. You know, right now they're sitting that, so they just had one of those 4-point games against Buffalo. So they lost that. Buffalo's 2 points ahead of them. We're recording this obviously Friday afternoon, so before Friday evening's games, Buffalo, I believe, has a game this evening. Ottawa's a point back with 3 games in hand. They're playing much better hockey under Jacques Martin right now and kind of making a bit of a push. The Coyotes, as you mentioned, have lost 6 in a row. But they're only 2 points back with a game in hand. Even Columbus, who are sitting right now with the fourth best lottery odds, they're at 46 points. They're 6 points behind the Canadiens with 2 games in hand. So let's put that as the possible floor for the Canadiens, even though it's making up a 6-point gap is pretty unlikely when you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, as bad as the Canadiens are playing. That's going to be tough. So getting into the top five is a definite possibility here, especially if the Canadiens were to lose on Tuesday. But you look at the schedule. So after that Coyotes game is going to be the last home game before the deadline. So it could conceivably be the last home game for 1, 2, 3, who knows how many, maybe none. But it could be the last home game for some of the players on this team. Then they go to Florida, who is a powerhouse, Tampa, Nashville fighting for their playoff lives, Carolina, Toronto, then you have another 4-point game against Columbus, and then it's Boston, and then they go out, and then it's Boston, and then they go out west, Western Canada, where they never perform well, but you also have teams that, you know, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver used to be a bit of a cream puff trip through Western Canada. Couldn't be further from the truth now. Then you have Seattle, Colorado. That's like a 2-week road trip that they're going to be on, almost 2 weeks. It's 12 days, if I'm not mistaken. That's going to be tough. And then you have Philly and Carolina. So, like, by the end of March, I mean, how many of those games can the Canadiens conceivably win, especially if they get gutted between now and March 8th? Like, it's not hard to see a reality where by the end of March, they've lost a lot of games and have positioned themselves quite nicely for the draft lottery.
Yeah, well, I don't think that they're going to get gutted that much, you know, you know, the likely candidates to be traded are very few. And I'm not sure that the Western Canada trip is as bad as you describe it to be. I think I would take, if I'm the Canadiens and I'm looking for wins, I'll take a Western Canada trip over a trip to Florida any day. I think that
you're going,
if memory
Calgary,
serves
Edmonton,
well,
Vancouver. I mean, Edmonton, yeah. Vancouver. That's tough. That's tough.
For sure. Because they're good teams right now. It's not necessarily a historical thing, but for sure. These Edmonton's on.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and even Calgary. I mean, Calgary's playing well, and so who knows by then? I mean, that game's on March 16th, so we'll see what happens.
Speaking of teams that might be gutted.
I might be gutted by March 8th, exactly. So that Calgary team might look much different. But anyhow, point being is that schedule's difficult. You know, like they have no back-to-backs. It's the only good part of it. It's actually very well spread out. But it's a difficult schedule. So the Canadiens are playing. The weird thing about this is that they've lost 4 straight. They're in this predicament, but I don't feel they're playing as bad as that would suggest. An interesting kind of side note here is I was kind of looking at their games, their game log on Natural Stat Trek.
Yeah.
And all season, Canadiens have not been doing very well when it comes to expected goal percentage. I think for the season, they're one of the worst teams in the league by that metric. But generally, you look through their games, and most of them, they were in the 40s, and they weren't doing all that well. Over their last six games, according to Natural Stat Trick, they've won the expected goal battle at 5-on-5 against their last six opponents. 57%, 52%, I'm rounding here, 57, 52, 55, 54, 64, 62. Those games were a 7-2 loss to the Blues, 5-0 win against the Ducks, but then 7-4 loss to the Rangers, 4-3 loss to the Caps, 3-2 loss to the Sabres, and then 4-1 against the Penguins. So, you know, I think after the game in Pittsburgh last night, Marty kind of mentioned, and he looked sort of distraught in the sense that, you know, he said, I'm paraphrasing, but basically it sounds like I keep saying the same thing, but I thought overall, I thought overall we played pretty well, you know, but they just had this 2-minute lapse where they gave up a couple of goals, and, you know, Brendan Gallagher takes an absolute brain dead penalty in the neutral zone for no apparent reason, which again has been a theme for him. We've gone over that a lot, but it's really, you know, overall, I think the Canadians have reason to be somewhat encouraged with the way they're playing of late, even though they're not getting results.
But I mean, it's true that Martin Saint-Louis has been saying over and over, I think we're, for the most part, I like what we're doing. It's only lapses and we can't convert, but any mistake comes in the back of our net. It's like, it's really more of the same. It's Groundhog's Day when it comes to the result. But there was a one point in the season where, well, early in the season, where this team was saved a lot by their goaltenders. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same anymore. You know, only in February, the Canadian save percentage is .875. So that's in eight games. It's not great.
No.
Or, you know, as Louis Domingue would say after eating spicy pork and broccoli, not the best.
Not the best, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's intriguing, though, that you've got four straight losses and yet the team stays above water in terms of high danger chances, shot shares, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's enough to say, okay, we're building something that's solid there. Because it still looks like, you know, even though you play well, but you've got those little moments, what do we hear from hockey players all the time? Any mistake can end up in the back of your net. Well, if you make two or three of those mistakes, but the rest of the time you play well, those two or three mistakes turn into goals, and that's it. You're done. So I think that there's really into this the fact that it's a young blue line. There's only two really NHL veterans in there with Matheson and Salah. And Matheson himself, even though he's got an amazing offensive season, has been prone to mental lapses, turnovers, and he's not the best defending defenseman in the league. So I think that they're being exposed in that sense, but I'm just concerned with to which extent is this a personnel issue or is this just letting time for the teachings and the learning that they're going through to really set in and for those young players to learn from it, not only the defensemen, but really the five-man unit, and eventually it will pay off in the future. It has to, because otherwise, you know, we keep hearing from this team that from the fans that this team needs more scoring, that they need at least one more bona fide top six forwards and all that. But the truth is, they also need to be able to defend. And if it won't matter if they go fetch a superstar up front, they need to be able to defend. And Natural Stat Trick gives a certain portrait of the situation, but I feel like sometimes the eye test gives another.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, listen, the Canadiens' mistakes are big mistakes. Like, that's the thing. That's what Natural Stat Trick doesn't catch is the glaring nature of it. To me, the one that jumps out, and to me, if I were Marty St. Louis, this would drive me bonkers. So the Canadiens play on Saturday against the Caps. Martin makes the unusual call Well, the team makes, I don't know who did actually, but the team makes the unusual call of practicing on the Sunday after. Then they get the Monday off, then they practice Tuesday, and then they played Wednesday against the Sabres. So over those two practices on Sunday and Tuesday, the obvious focus of practice both days was net front, slot coverage, battles, getting sticks tied up, things of that nature, drill after drill after drill, where it became obvious that that's what's going on. They had all these drills, but shots are coming in from the point and people have to defend their net front and tie up guys and do this. And they were not doing it for the offensive benefits of it. It was quite clear, especially if you looked at their previous games, that, you know, being loose and being leaky in the net front was an issue. And so, you know, Marty sort of, you know, wrote it off during, I think, was it Super Bowl weekend? No, after the Blues game, I asked him about net front, and you know, he's like, "Oh, which one?" and whatever. But I think it became obvious. So, deal two practices on it. They play the Sabres. They're up 1-0 after the first period on another Arbor Jack eye bomb, who we should discuss at some point. But I mean, it's they come out of the second period, and they give up a tying goal to Zemgus Girgensons. How does Zemgus Girgensons score that goal? By standing in front of the Canadiens' net alone, unbothered, and just left to his own devices to tip a shot from the point past the Canadiens' netminder. If I were a coach who had just spent, just devoted 2 days of practice, almost the entirety of the practices, to that specific situation, and to watch that happen when you lead 1-0 in the game, it ties the game. The Canadiens eventually took the lead just a couple of minutes later, but still, regardless, situationally, for that to happen after the two practices the Canadiens had, that's what I would be concerned about if I'm Martin St. Louis. Is that why? How is it that, and in the past he's done this, he's spent multiple practices on specific areas of the game in the past, and the team has generally responded well to those. You remember the trip out to. Trip out to California.
Yeah. You know, practice in Anaheim.
On the forecheck. And they had the whole emphasis was the forecheck. And it was two straight days of practice on the forecheck. And the forecheck markedly improved from that point on. This was two straight days of practice on this. And the first chance they had to show that they had improved in that area, they give up a goal in that exact situation. So it's, you know, so when you say, like, is it personnel? Is it this? Is that? I think it's a mixture of everything. I mean, I think the coaching staff can wear that a little bit. Like, obviously the message didn't get through, or there were other aspects of defensive zone coverage that they needed to address more than what they did. But the players, I mean, these brain farts are on the players as well, you know? And so I think it's a mixture of both, but there's definitely something there that needs to be addressed, because Marty's not wrong when he says, you know, when we make a mistake, it's in the back of our net. When they make a mistake, we can't finish. That kind of summarizes the situation pretty well. And no one's going to play mistake-free hockey, but that Girgensons goal is not a matter of them not getting a save. You know, that's a matter of them leaving a guy alone in front of the net to tip a shot past their goalie with no one even coming close to bothering him. And that's exactly what Martin St. Louis tried to address over two straight days.
Yeah, that level of awareness. And and Marty mentioned on more than one occasion that the capacity of this team to correct themselves quickly was something that he was happy with when he takes a step back and looks at the positive of the season so far. That's meant to be one positive, but I feel like defensively, in their own end, not necessarily off the puck, because there's aspects of the puck where they've gotten markedly better, but I feel like in their own end, it's, you try to fix something and it slips not too long after. You know, rush coverage has been an issue in and out throughout the season. We had another example against the Penguins on their third goal on Thursday night. But I want to go back to Gallagher, because it's true that we mentioned Gallagher on a few occasions, but that new mistake, do you think that we're entering a different territory in terms of the level of patience that Marty can have towards Gallagher and the balance between the feistiness and the effort and whatnot. Does it, is there a real benefit to playing him, continuing to trust him, or playing more or playing less? I feel like he's getting out of runway by the way that he's been playing this season. And
he should listen. He's getting a lot of benefit of the doubt. Let's be honest. Brendan Gallagher is a player that Martin Saint will be played against. You know, I mean, he's getting benefit of the doubt. I think there's a lot of parts of him that Marty appreciates. I mean, you looked in that game against the Penguins, and on at least two occasions that I can think of, Gallagher took just shots on goal because he just seemed out of ideas. And he's done that historically throughout his career, but I feel like now it's happening kind of just more out of exasperation or just not knowing what the better option is. Whereas before it was like genuinely trying to score. He was just a shot volume guy. And that's how that line played when he was playing with Dano and Tatar. But in that Pittsburgh game, there were two occasions where he shot the puck and Jari stopped it and smothered it and got a face off. And I was like, what was the point of that? Like it might as well be a turnover. You know, now you got to win the face off. Like it's just not, and it's definitely not what Marty wants this team to do, you know, just take kind of hope shots that you hope, you know, the notion that throw the puck on net, you never know what will happen. Yes, it's true, but I don't think that's how the Canadians want to play offensively. You know, they would like to create scoring chances and not just shoot and hope. But I think it's telling of where he's at with his game right now, you know, and I think that the penalty on Jeff Carter in the neutral zone, skating by, tugging on his arm for no reason, is another sign of how he's just kind of exasperated with what is happening for him on the ice. And, you know,
well, judging by Marty's look, the coach too is exasperated.
Yeah. And listen, he resisted again after the game to call him out and said, I think Gally knows that was wrong, except how many times are you going to say that before you realize that he clearly doesn't know because he keeps doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's at least three times that I could think of this season, but it's probably more, where Marty's given that answer about Brendan Gallagher. Gallagher's a veteran. He knows. I look at that penalty and I'm like, he doesn't know. He just got back from a suspension where he did something reckless and needless in the neutral zone far from his net. You know, I know he explained that he thought Pelech was going to wind up with a breakaway if he didn't catch up to him, and all the things that he justified in his mind. But the reality is that it was a non-threatening situation, and Brendan Gallagher did something needless to put his team in trouble. And everything I just said there applies exactly to what happened in Pittsburgh with that Jeff Carter penalty, which. This is going to sound weird since Gallagher, you know, pegged Pelech right in the head with a nasty check, but you had less chance of getting away with the Jeff Carter thing because it wasn't like if Gallagher had just hit Pelech in the chest instead of the head, he probably wouldn't even have gotten a penalty there. You know, I mean, it was a little late, but so he might have gotten an interference penalty, but probably not if we're being honest. Like he had just had the puck. The Carter thing, there's no way he's getting away with that. There's just none. It's like there's no reason to do it. And then a few seconds later, the Penguins score. And it's just like you can't be a veteran who knows and then continuously does the thing he's supposed to know not to do.
Well, we've discussed the timing also of those penalties that put the team in trouble. But it's not as if those penalties were really penalties of being just a bit too aggressive on the forecheck, or you're trying to prevent a goal and you take this quote unquote good penalty. Those are terrible. There's just bad penalties. And so the reason why I was asking about, you know, the risk and benefit, it's just that as he progresses in his career, he's giving you less and less, but he's costing you more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point does that equation becomes untenable for the Canadiens?
Well, I mean, what is the alternative? Like, what do you do?
Well, right now there's not a lineup full of superstars in front of him. He can still hope to play on the third line once in a while. He did against Pittsburgh. But on average, you know, since he came back from his suspension, he plays roughly 12 minutes a night. Uh-huh. I think that's how things are going to be from this point on. I don't see it changing anytime soon.
That's what I mean, is that there's nothing more to do. He's already not playing a lot.
No.
I don't think they're going to take him out of the lineup. He was playing on the fourth line when he came back out of the suspension. He got moved up a little bit. I don't see what the options are this season, you know, and then you got to hope that he resets over the offseason. And I mean, the positive for Gallagher is he's played every game so far, other than the five that he was suspended for, obviously.
That's true.
But, you know, he's managed to stay in the lineup. I know I'm repeating myself, but I still believe that there's something to be gained by having a Brendan Gallagher in your lineup, even when this team becomes good, you know, down at the bottom of your lineup, it's still there. Except it's hard to make that argument when you keep doing costly, silly, careless things like this. That's the problem, is that argument becomes harder and harder to make when the one thing you're supposed to be bringing, which is like a veteran discipline and showing an example of how to be a pro in games in certain situations and not do anything reckless and not put yourself in a position to be called for penalties, even if you don't think they are penalties. If you're putting yourself in a position to be called, that's veterans tend to not do that, not give the refs an opportunity to blow the whistle. And Brendan Gallagher has given the refs way too many opportunities to blow the whistle this season. So for this season, I don't really see any other consequence than what he's already got. He's already got pretty minimal, maybe could be taken off the second wave of the power play, which plays like 30 seconds a game anyway. So, but yeah, it's something that he needs to look at over the offseason and be like, why is this happening? Why am I doing this? And really kind of get his head around the notion of being a lower in the lineup veteran leader for this team. And I think if he can do that effectively, then there's some good to be had with Brendan Gallagher as new players come in, young players who can learn from him. But he's not, you're not going to be learning from him now if he keeps doing stuff like that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
No, it doesn't. That does not equate to what Marty has been routinely saying about Gallagher, which is he's bringing his teammates into the fight. That's not bringing his teammates into the fight. That's in his DNA as a hockey player. That's how he's been throughout his career. That's his identity. But right now, we're not seeing that.
No. So no. And his identity was always like, listen, he's always taken penalties, but they've always been penalties you can live with. They've always been penalties where you say, okay, well, once in a while that's going to happen when you play like that, but we'll take the overall package. So if he gets called for goalie interference, you're like, okay, well, we'll take the 10 times where he disrupts life for the goaltender and creates offense that way, or creates goals without actually getting credit for them, or scores himself. We'll take that goalie interference penalty every now and then, because that's the cost of doing business that way. Whereas now there's no correlation between the penalties he's taking and the benefits of his style of play. So he needs to shape up. You know, it's honestly like it's he's at a bit of a crossroads as far as his career goes, and I think he has a lot of good years to offer if he could stay healthy, but he just got to get his head around this new version of himself that he needs to sort of adapt to.
So we'll see if there's a, in terms of accountability, if he ends up being on the fourth line against New Jersey on Saturday, but the Montreal Canadiens have a new fourth line centerman in yes. Colin White. So it's
former Canadiens client.
Yes. He's got one of many.
Yeah.
One of many. There's another one who got injured. Jaden Struble got injured late in the game against Pittsburgh. We'll see a bit later on if it's serious or not. But so Colin White, it's an interesting movement that happened in the past few days, past couple of days, with first the Canadiens claiming White on waivers off the Pittsburgh Penguins. So it's always fun when you see a guy basically going from one locker room to the other during the same
absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. It's the best.
Yeah. It's
my favorite types of transactions.
It doesn't beat Joel Youngblood, though, in baseball.
No, it doesn't beat Joel Youngblood in baseball. But, well, you want to tell the story? I think some of our younger listeners might not know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because we were kids back then. So 1984, if I'm not mistaken, the Montreal Expos are playing in San Francisco.
Yes.
And they are playing this utility player named Joel Youngblood. And then after the game, they trade him. They were playing an afternoon game, and they trade him to the New York Mets. And Joel Youngblood managed to play two games on the same day for two different teams.
Yeah.
So I might have – I think I've got the sequence right. But that's pretty much what
I believe that's correct. But yeah, yeah, definitely the end result was Joel Youngblood playing for two different teams on the same day following a trade. So, yes.
Yeah, because I got mixed up. Yeah, because the other thing is that I think that he played for San Francisco afterwards.
Afterwards, yes.
Yeah, but I think in this instance, it was Montreal and the Mets on the same day, which is bonkers. I was trying to figure out, I thought for a moment that what happened to Colin White had happened also to Devante Smith-Pelly, but I was wrong. It did not. Do you have any instance of something happening with the Canadians similar?
Well, Glenn Metropolit was with the Flyers, I believe, when the Canadians picked him up, and Montreal was in Philadelphia. And they picked up Glenn Metropolit on waivers, and he crossed over and played for the Canadiens that night. So yeah, it's okay. Oh, wait a minute here. I actually pulled it up.
Good old Metro.
Good old Metro. What
a cool dude.
Loved him.
Cool dude that guy
loved
was.
Him. Oh, I'll never forget him just crapping all over Jacques Martin. I think it was before during the Capitals series. I think it was before game – it would have been before game five. So the Canadiens were down 3-1. They were in Washington. And I hung around afterwards, and I talked to Metro for a while. And he was Because he was scratched. And so he had a bone to pick. And did he ever pick it? This guy doesn't know what he's doing, this and that. Like, it was just like – it was just a tirade. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, this is gold. But yeah, it wasn't actually an interview. Like, I didn't have a recorder out. I didn't have a notepad out. It was just two guys talking. And so I never actually used any of that stuff because to me, it wasn't clear if he knew we were on the record or not. And I don't like it. If I don't make it clear that I'm going to use this stuff, then I prefer not to. But it was so I couldn't have known that he was going to just spout off like this. And I was honestly just having a conversation with him, and it turned into that. But then, you know, the Canadiens won
the next 14 years later.
I could tell the story 14 years later. I feel pretty confident that Glenn Metropolit is not going to bind me saying that he wasn't happy with the coach at that time. No. He wasn't the only one. You know, we did that story kind of telling that playoff run. And, you know, there were meetings with players and coming up with strategies. And so a whole bunch of stuff happened. So maybe he wasn't all wrong, but the Canadiens did win their next three games, and and knock the Capitals out, which is the Glenn Metropolitan angle of crossing dressing rooms. But the Colin White thing, to get back to our original point.
Yes.
It's interesting because this was done largely for Laval. This was probably done more for Laval than it was for Montreal. And so that's interesting to me because Laval is playing. So think of Brandon Gignac in this situation. I was at Laval the morning skate this morning. And they said, so this was at 10:30 or 10:45. I spoke to JF Hull and he said, well, if Gignac gets through waivers, which now he has, and he gets here in time, then we plan on playing him tonight. So the Rocket are playing the Marlies this evening and again tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. And they're putting him right back in the lineup because Brandon Gignac has been the Laval Rocket's best player this season. From start to finish, they're most consistent. Their offense goes through him, as Hull said, and he's ecstatic to be getting him back because they're in a race and it's important to the organization that Laval make the playoffs. They're getting Sean Farrell back tonight after a 19-game absence, if I'm not mistaken. His second major injury of the season. But the young guys that are in Laval, this playoff race is going to be of utmost importance to the organization. And so Brandon Gignac is what I might suspect will be the first move meant to help the Rocket, but I can't imagine it'll be the last. I don't know if they're going to go out and trade for players to get to the Rocket, but I think the other moves are going to happen that are going to prioritize the Laval Rocket over the Canadiens, I would imagine, between now and the deadline.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't be surprised one bit if at some point, despite the fact that he does not deserve it, Joshua Roy would be sent down again.
Yeah.
He's proving right now that he plays at an NHL level, and there are nights – just like yesterday against Pittsburgh, where he's one of the better Montreal forwards. And despite that, because they will want to prioritize the Rocket, they might make that sort of move. Because we used to hear the expression nowadays is to say, we want to be playing meaningful games. Well, there are no more meaningful games for the Canadiens at this point where they're at in the standings and the schedule. It's extremely meaningful for the Rocket, though, and they want to keep it that way. And all those, they might not all be like future stars in the NHL, but there's a big enough group of players in Laval that could become the supporting cast of the Montreal Canadiens in the next few years.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. So Gignac could end up carving up a fourth line role as a regular in the NHL. He's got a chance to do that, but I'm thinking mainly, obviously, Logan Mailloux, but Emil Heinemann. You mentioned Farrell, who's got an outside chance of making it to the NHL. Trudeau has got a chance to. For now, Justin Barron is there. I don't know if he's going to stay in Laval or he's going to be called back, and there's going to be like a sort of a one goes up, one goes down type of situation on defense, but there's a and obviously, and Jakub Dobesh too, we could add his name to that group. So they're going to, they want to make sure that this team is able to have success, that they win those meaningful games so that that's, there's an investment, there's a chance at a learning experience in a winning environment. Granted, it's not at the NHL level, but they're going to take the next best thing because those guys are all part of the same organization. They're all on the same team in September. They're all mixed up, so they're gonna help the team that needs it the most. And honestly, sure. Colin White, he can. It could be him, could be another guy, but they're just taking a guy who can just make that job, make the job, or do the job for the Canadiens on the fourth line. And because they know him from his personality, he's a really outgoing, easy to deal with type of guy. They say he's going to be really low maintenance. And we can plug him there for the last X number of games that we have and really help our farm team to do what we want them to accomplish.
Yeah, and he's, you know, and that's the – they basically made a trade for Laval. They traded, you know, and so it's and you know, when you talk about the supporting cast, like when I think of – what the Canadiens hope to accomplish in Laval, I think of what Tampa did with Syracuse Crunch. Alex Killorn, Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson, like all these guys all came up, John Cooper as their coach there, all came up together. And, you know, no one would have looked at Andre Palat at that time and said, wow, that guy's going to be a future important piece of like multiple Stanley Cup final teams and winning teams.
Radko Gudas was there
too. Radko Gudas was there. Yeah. They had just amazing group of talent, unheralded talent, like not all high draft picks, you know. Tyler Johnson wasn't drafted. Palat, I think, was a 7th round pick, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, the hope would be that you create that environment, Laval, and you unearth or you develop guys like that, guys that you did not expect to become key players, but wind up becoming key players. And so it's important that they get into the playoffs, have those experiences. And so, you know, Laval has the 2 games against the Marlies, one tonight, Friday night. We're recording at 3:15. So Friday evening and then Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m., they play them again. So the Rocket entered this game 1 point behind the Marlies. The division's bonkers, right? So you have Cleveland at the top with 64 points. You have Syracuse second with 59. And then from third to sixth, you have Rochester at 54, Belleville at 53, Toronto at 52, Laval at 51. And then you have Utica at 47. So those 4 teams are 3 points apart. Rochester, Belleville, Toronto, Laval. So these 2 games against Toronto are obviously quite quite significant. Toronto has 2 games in hand on Laval, so that kind of skews that a bit. But they're significant games, and they definitely the organization has a lot to gain. If they want to recreate that Syracuse crunch experience or some version of it, their own version of it, they need to be playing playoff games. And so a critical time, and honestly, 2 weeks away from the deadline means that we're 2 weeks away from knowing who the Canadiens are going to paper to make them eligible for the AHL playoffs, you know, like, and they have to, that whole dance has to happen. And while we're on the subject, I know we didn't plan on talking about this, but you know, I spoke to Justin Barron this morning.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, he seems good. Actually, he's fully invested in what's going on in Laval. That's for sure. You know, that's his team. He hopes to be called up to the Canadiens. It's not as if he's like given up on being called up by the Canadiens, but he is not sitting by his phone waiting for that call. Is the impression
a little bit that I like get. Jack Eye earlier, who had really embraced the situation.
Well, that's my point. Is that you see what's going on with Jack Eye right now? You look at the games he's played recently, the confidence with the puck, striking the right balance between his own identity and the version of him the Canadiens want him to become. You know, really, I think is a feather in J.F. Hull's cap, but not only J.F. Hull in Laval, but the development staff, Adam Nicholas, Scott Pellerin, Paul Byron, you know, all the guys. Like, I was at the morning skate today, and Adam Nicholas was on the ice with guys. You know, like, so it's really an organizational thing. And to see Jack Eye come out the other side, you know, if you're Justin Barron, I think you should look at that and be like, okay, well, look what he's doing now. You know, now he's playing like impactful games. He's you know, had what,
21 minutes against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but yet not a top four defenseman. Somehow Marty took exception with our colleague Luc Jelena referring to him being in the top four, even though he was third on the team for defenseman in ice time in that game.
Yeah.
But if I'm Barron, I'm looking at that and I'm like, okay, well, this process, here's the result of the process I'm in right now. And that, frankly, is a healthy thing for an organization, that you have a guy who was confused, was not playing well, looked to be going through the telltale signs of a sophomore slump and everything that it entails, the mental sort of mind meld that goes on after you have a successful rookie season, goes down there, pays his, like, does his work, works on his game, gets a lot of help from a lot of different areas of resources of the organization, goes back up and succeeds. And now Barron's trying to do the same thing. So I think he's in a good place. He feels, you know, I mentioned to him how Marty St. Louis mentioned that when he got sent down, his confidence was really down, and it was starting to impact different areas of his game. And while he didn't like hearing that, he did kind of admit that that is basically what happened. And so now, he sort of this was funny. So I was like, so how do you, how, what is the process like of getting your confidence back in the AHL, which in and of itself being here, you would think would be a knock to your confidence, like a further knock to your confidence. Like, oh, I've been sent down. How is it building? And then, so he started giving sort of, you know, increased puck touches and more time with the puck and this and that. And at one point he sort of kind of whispered, he's like, you're also like not playing against the best players in the world anymore. And so you feel better about yourself.
And I was like, he's probably their best defenseman down
there. Well, it's just, and that's just a fact. You were not, they're literally, you were literally in a league with the best players in the world. And now you're in a lower league, which is still an excellent league, but the level of quality goes down. It's just the way he said it. I felt like he was embarrassed to say it or just didn't feel the good saying it, but it's a fact, you know, you're playing against worse players. Yeah. So, but I think that there's a whole lot more to it when it comes to what the Canes were able to do with Jack Kaye, and to see him come out the other side is I think a really encouraging sign for the organization. But if I'm Justin Barron, I'm looking at Arbor Jack Kaye and saying, I'm going to keep my head down and work down here. And that could be me. And I think that's what he's doing, to his credit.
And I think as a sidebar to that, I'm not sure to which extent it's a big factor, but it must play in the player's psyche somewhere. The fact that Laval has a bigger building, a full building, they've got like very professional NHL caliber infrastructures, makes it so that when you go down, you don't feel like all of a sudden you're in a dump. You know, and the gap is so huge that you remember day after day how huge the gap is. Because when you're in Laval, the environment is it's refreshing. It's really, if you're not in the NHL, it's the next best thing. So I think that for those players, it helps soften the blow a little bit. The fact that they're so,
for sure,
and they're looked after so well. You know,
I mean, we heard Arbor talking about how great it is to play in Laval while he was there. You know, when we were both talking to him that day, and he was like blown away at the contrast between Laval and some of these other buildings. I think he mentioned like Lehigh Valley and like, you know, some of the buildings that they play in, where it's just night and day. He's like, I believe his quote was like, "Are we even in the same league? Like, does he see? How is it possible to play games here in Laval and it feels like this, and now we're playing this game in an empty building with no life?" So definitely an advantage as far as that stuff's concerned. But
I just wanted to quickly go back to the Gignac and White thing, because the Canadians did gamble a little bit I assume that they must have made the proper estimation and calibration that they would not lose Gignac on waivers.
Yeah.
But if they had lost him on waivers, it would have looked bad on the organization.
Yes.
Because trading Gignac for Colin White
would be awful. Yeah, that'd be terrible. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I mean,
they must have known what they were doing, because you're testing, very often you tend to test the waters and you understand in advance, you know, who is likely to be interested in your player. You send fillers, you get as much information as you can, so that when you put someone on waivers, it's because you want him to be picked up, or it's because you know that he's not going to be picked up, but it should not, either outcome should not come as a super surprise if you've done your homework beforehand.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can't know. Like, that's why I think, which is still strikes me as odd, but like the Canes knew that they were going to lose Gustav Lidstrom to the Ducks. They had to have. How could they not have? You know, and so they did that for a reason that I still haven't quite figured out, why they just gave a player away. But it seemed obvious that that's what was going on that time, you know, like Lidstrom, like that was right after the Jamie Drysdale Cutter Gauthier trade. The Ducks needed a right shot D. All of a sudden, Gustav Lindstrom's on waivers. I'm like, oh, look, there's a solution to our problem right there. After not going on waivers for weeks and not playing and not getting in the lineup, but the thought being that we can't send him back to Laval because we're going to lose him on waivers. And they put him on waivers on the very day where he is most likely to get picked up on waivers.
Yes.
Something weird there. But anyhow, I mean, it's yes, I think so. I do think they did have to have an inkling that, I mean, the main thing they had going for them is that whoever picks up someone on waivers has to keep them on the NHL roster, right? So you could do a quick analysis around the league and say, okay, who even has a roster spot that would make sense to replace someone with Brendan Gignac? Like, if you look around and you sort of do the calculations and be like, okay, well, he's not likely to get picked up because there's nowhere for him to go. Mm-hmm. But you never know with the bot. But anyhow, you're right. It would have been a bad look, but I think they felt pretty confident that he was going to get through.
Hey, Arpin.
Yeah. It's time. Okay. So it is Friday. It's Friday. So last week for our Future Friday segment, Marc-Antoine, because I'm a big child and Marc-Antoine's not. So Marc-Antoine allowed me, after cutting me off previously, we had listeners comment that Marc-Antoine, let Arpin sing the Future Friday jingle. So I did. And it was awful, but it was fun. So we had a listener by the name of Greg McPherson who heard that and was like, you know what? I'm going to make you a jingle for Future Friday. Now, Greg McPherson is a musician. He actually is playing a show tomorrow, Saturday evening, at the Broom Factory in Kingston. He's a recording artist. So he enjoys the show, sent us an email, and included five different versions of a Future Friday jingle, some of which sampled my singing of the Future Friday jingle. So today, on February 23rd, big shout out to Greg McPherson for doing this for us. We are debuting the Future Friday jingle. Here it is. Enjoy. Future Friday. Great.
I love it.
It's got kind of like a reggae downbeat sort of vibe to it. Like, yes. I love it. Greg McPherson. I love it. Thank you so much, Greg McPherson. That's phenomenal. You'll hear that every Friday from now on. That is the official theme song to Future Friday on the Basswing Good Day Notebook.
All right. So
let's get into Future Friday then.
Yeah, so we're combining two things because there's a listener who sent us a question for the Monday mailbag that was about a prospect. So we decided to answer that question on Future Friday. So it was the Gargoyle who sent us a question regarding Philip Eriksson. Philip Eriksson, he said, he wrote to us, this is what a sixth round pick last year. He started in the SHL and has 17 points in 15 games in the Allsvenskan. Should he be someone to watch? And have you heard anything from the organization recently about this prospect? So I did a bit of digging. I actually spoke to his junior coach in Sweden. Yeah, I did. So really?
This is real Eriksson, devotion to Future Friday, I gotta say. Like, this, I'm really impressed.
Well, you know.
Yeah. I like it. Well,
people
like
ask it. Questions. We good. Yeah. So it turns out that Eriksson was one of the top U20 players. I mean, on the U18 team where he was playing in Trohja, he was playing over 25 minutes a game. Uh-huh. But he's considered a bit of a late bloomer. And traditionally, in Sweden, the way that they do, like, their national teams, usually the U16 – that they identify, they let them grow together, and they basically remain pretty much the same group until the U20. They remain the same national team. So it's hard to crack the lineup if you have not been identified early on. And Eriksson was not. And he was – so he's perceived as a bit of a late bloomer, definitely someone who flew under the radar, but in his junior team, he was an assistant captain. He was really the sort of guy, not certainly not a rah-rah guy, more like leading by example. He was playing center there, but right now he's playing in he's playing for Nybro in the Allsvenskan, and he's used more as a winger. Mm-hmm. And what I was told was that it's definitely his hockey sense that stands out the most. And I watched a few of his games, but his junior coach told me that for the Canadiens to draft him in the sixth round, he felt as though it was a potential steal for them. Now, he might be biased because he coached him and he really liked him. He was really a difference maker on his team. But mm-hmm. You got to recognize the fact that, you know, he's playing right now for Nybro. He's playing his 16 game with Nybro, and he's the only player on the team who's at more than a point per game clip. And he's only 18 years old. So yeah. That's very encouraging.
He's getting massive ice time, like massive.
Massive. I mean, he's playing over 20 minutes with Nybro. Mm-hmm. So the Gargoyle, our listener, mentions in his tweet that he had started the season in the SHL, where he was playing only 9:30 on average per game. Yeah. So it's really a matter of opportunity with Nybro. He's playing both the power play and the PK, but he's mainly an offensive guy. So he's used on the in the right circle on the power play. And he's definitely a lot more of a passer and a playmaker than a shooter. Mm-hmm. I saw him score a goal though against Kalmar, Kalmar, where it was an amazing backhand shot, like top shelf, really nice backhand. But he doesn't use his shot a whole ton. But anyway, that's where he plays on the PP. But even though he plays on the PK, he's definitely an offensive guy. He's not yet a 200-foot player, but he's committed at blocking shots if need be. He's a guy that uses his speed also to press on the forecheck. So he seems to be like a pretty good forechecker. But it's what I've seen from him, and it was confirmed by the coach over there. It's the fact that he's got very good anticipation at identifying the empty spaces, the pockets of ice. So as soon as he passes the puck, he goes to those pockets, so he becomes an option again. So he gets the play moving a lot that way. But he's skinny. I mean, he's 6 foot tall. He's not a small kid, but he's really, really skinny, and he's never going to win a ton of battles, and
Elite Prospects has him at 172.
Yeah, that's it. So we always talk about European players, how the game could translate. That's an issue where there might be a problem of translability of his game, because he's not bound to win a lot of puck battles. He doesn't engage physically almost at all. He always uses his stick. So it's going to be a challenge. So for a player like that, it's really a long-term investment, where no matter if he's putting up a lot of points and he's really impressing a lot of people in the Allsvenskan this year, he's a sort of project that you say you might play in the Allsvenskan next year and then play another year or two in the SHL, and then we'll talk. But if the Canadiens start getting all excited because he's putting up a lot of points in that second division in Sweden this year, and they think that they need to sign the guy and bring him over quickly, it might be a mistake. So and especially with the fact that he doesn't have a big build, let him get some maturity in his play and his body.
I don't think they'll feel any urgency. And it actually reminds me of something that Jeff Hull was talking about today, because, you know, with Farrell coming back in Laval, you know, I kind of asked about, because prior to the season, you know, when it was thought that Philip Meschard was going to play in Laval, Hull expressed some concern that they would have Meschard, Kidney, Farrell. He didn't mention him at the time, but he does now. Jared Davidson, he puts in that group. And was worried that he have too many smaller guys on his team. So today when I asked him about that, and like, how do you think Farrell and Kidney are learning to to play at their size in the AHL and kind of be those kind of complete players that you need to be at the pro level. He said, you know, they're progressing well, but it's going to take time and you got to be patient. That's when he threw Jared Davidson in the mix, who was gone on a scoring tear ever since Gignac got called up. He's been driving the bus offense wise in Laval. And so that's another guy who's, you know, was a fifth round pick last year in 2022, I should say. So he's like these kinds of guys, later picks, Davidson, Kidney, Farrell, they're longer term projects. And so the more of those longer term projects that wind up in Laval at some point, the better off the organization will be that of unearthing a potential Palat, let's say, to use the prior analogy. And maybe Eriksson will be someone like that. Who knows? But probably not. But the fact that they have someone showing some potential is a good sign. The other thing I want to say is that if you think back to the last draft, the 2023 draft, starting with the Reinbacher pick, going right down to the bottom of the Canadiens docket, a lot of draft experts were puzzled by what the Canadiens did at the draft. A lot of fans were upset, not only with the Reinbacher pick, but the fact that they put three goalies, the fact that they didn't really get any elite offensive talent in any way, shape, or form. But you look at the draft now, just a few months later, obviously Reinbacher is a whole separate category. Jacob Fowler is kicking ass at Boston College, has been one of the best goalies in the NCAA. Florian Jacky, we talked about last week. Bogdan Konyushkov is, you know, borderline, he's a really intriguing prospect for this organization. Like what he's doing in the KHL at his age, at his size, is quite promising, you know, sort of an offensive defenseman. Then you look at Volokin, the goalie they took in the fifth round, the Russian goalie who's ripping up the MHL and has the organization quite excited. And then you have Eriksson in the sixth round. So
yeah,
just, I guess, sometimes you got to let things play out. And you know what? Maybe none of these players make it that I just mentioned, but every player I just mentioned, with the exception of Fowler, I think everyone recognized that Fowler was a very good pick in the third round and that he had a lot of promise and no one really questioned that. But the Jacky pick was definitely questioned by you and I as well. Konyushkov, no one had even heard of him really. The Volokin, you know, was the third goalie the Canadiens picked. So that elicited some outrage. And I don't think the needle moved much when the Canadiens called Philip Eriksson's name in the sixth round. But still, you know, it's the initial reaction to draft picks, the initial draft grades that are given out at various publications, the initial analysis. You know, sometimes you just got to let it play out and see how things play out. And frankly, that draft, perhaps with the exception of Reinbacher, that draft is just because of all the, you know, that's a whole separate story, but it's that there's a lot of good stories coming out of the players the Canadiens drafted in 2023, yeah, at least at this early stage. And Philip Eriksson's one of them. He's just another one.
For sure. And he's been splitting his season between the SHL and the Allsvenskan, as I was saying earlier. In the SHL, he's playing for Vekle. Actually, yeah.
Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
See,
yeah,
I didn't want to say it because I didn't know how to pronounce it. Yeah, it's not Vaxio.
Yeah. No, it's not Vaxio. It's Vekle.
But there's no L.
So
anyhow, it's okay.
I know.
You've gotten it from good sources.
Forsberg should be Forsbre, and then still, I mean, the R is not the R before the E. Ah. There's all sorts of things that we don't understand.
Right. So it's Vexle. I like
Vekle.
Vekle. Because I'm a Lakers fan and they're called the Lakers. So I like that. Vekle Lakers. Yeah.
So that team, he's not playing there a lot. But that's the thing with the SHL is that when the top teams traditionally don't play their youngsters a lot. And the worst teams either. Because the worst teams that are fighting against relegation, they're going to try to load up as much as possible on older and capable players that can provide immediate results. So it's definitely, in that sense, it's not really a
development league. It's not a development league. It's literally not. It's yes, there are players developing in the SHL. It's not a development. I mean, I just had the same experience in Switzerland with the Swiss League. These are professional leagues where they have concerns about selling tickets, about paying salaries, about making money. They're businesses, and they have to win in order to make money, in order to get people in the seats. So the SHL, just like the Liga in Finland, just like the National League in Switzerland, just like the KHL, not development leagues. They're European professional leagues, and they're not, they have no interest in playing a kid up the lineup just because the Montreal Canadiens want to see him in a top six role and play him on the power play, because they don't do that. And they shouldn't, frankly. Yeah. It's not their job. So, but I think 17 points in 15 games in the Allsvenskan is pretty decent for a sixth round pick,
Yeah, and he got an assist today also. So it's 18 and 16.
There you go.
It's excellent. It gets people excited. So even though, my point was that even though he split between two leagues, so he's got a lot less games played in the Allsvenskan than the other rookies. But his name is starting to be mentioned for an award called the Golden Cage. So basically, when you wear a cage with your helmet. So the Golden Cage is basically like the top rookie in the league.
Oh, because the U18 players have to wear a cage. Right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. That's a good award.
Right. So Golden Cage. And so he played a lot less than the other ones, but he's been so dominant that he's forcing himself into that conversation, despite the fact that he might not quite meet the threshold of the numbers of games played just yet. But I mean, he scored in 12 of his 16 games, so he's been very, very effective. And I like also he's got good pace to his game too. Quite a good skater. He looks a little bit, he reminds, when I was skating, was watching him, he reminded me a little bit of Lars Eller in terms of the way that he moved. Mm-hmm. Was skating and a bit bouncy in his stride of the Lars Eller in the Montreal days, maybe not the way he's skating now, but he's got quick edges and whatnot. So anyway, that's Filip Eriksson for you guys.
All right, great. All right, well, that'll wrap things up for this week's episode. Thank you all for listening. If you made it this far, a reminder, you can, if you're watching us on YouTube, you can subscribe to the SCPN channel and follow us there, obviously on Apple or any other podcast platform. If you give us a rating, give us a follow or a subscription on that platform so that you will be notified every time a new episode comes up. We would appreciate that. Would help keep the lights on in here. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back on Monday with a new episode. Until then, have a great weekend. Marc-Antoine, enjoy your weekend.
You too. Sure. Let's go get a beer.
Sure.